there's just this incredible demand right now being created for all of these goods necessary to construct data centers. One of the challenges, though, with that is we're seeing very pronounced price increases. As an example, memory chips coming from South Korea, which is the high bandwidth memory, 849% year-over-year price increases based on the import data. So that's not 8.49, that's 849%. It's now 8 times more expensive.
Welcome to Supply Chain Now, the number one voice of supply chain. Join us as we share critical news, key insights, and real supply chain leadership from across the globe, one conversation at a time.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Scott Luton and the one and only Corinne Bursa right here with you on Supply Chain Now. Corinne, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. It's great to be with you. I want to offer my warm welcome to all the supply chain movers and shakers out there as well that are joining us today.
Outstanding. We welcome them all. The people still make global supply chain happen each and every day. And it's great to have you all here with us here today as we deliver the latest installment in a popular long-running series here where we're going to be sharing key insights from the latest quarterly edition of one of the leading transportation industry resources, the U.S. Bank Freight Payment Index, this time for Q2 2026. Now, we always get a lot of feedback from this practical, actionable series. And one of the reasons, Corinne, is we dive into deep what the data is saying, but we marry that with practical practitioner observations from the market, both at a national level and a regional level. It's really a formula that's been working well. And we'll not only get a good sense of what transpired in the domestic freight market in the second quarter 2026, but we're also going to share a few nuggets that will help prep you and your teams for where we are now and where we're heading. I tell you, we've heard from tons of supply chain teams who lean on a variety of resources like this one to better understand the landscape so they can better plan moving forward. News you can use, Corinne. Is that right?
Indeed it is. And you know, I'm a big proponent of facts first, not feelings. And this, I look forward to this report every quarter because it really helps us keep our fingers on the pulse of what's happening in the industry. So the Freight Payment Index is really valuable because it gives us that perspective on how raw materials are moving, finished goods are moving. And when raw materials and finished goods are moving, that means the economy is moving. So I look forward to what the team has got to share with us today.
I'm with you. We got a great panel joining us in just a second. Folks, as we talk about the U.S. Bank Freight Payment Index for Q2 2026, one essential element to what makes this so powerful is all the treasure troves of data processed through U.S. Bank. Did you know, Corinne, U.S. Bank processed $46 billion worth of transactions in 2025 alone? So all those data-driven insights, and one thing you mentioned, the exceptional commentary from Bob Costello, the chief economist over the American Trucking Associations, all that is what makes this U.S. Bank Freight Payment Index a terrific resource for many business leaders out there. So with that said, Corinne, let's welcome in our 1-2 punch here today, starting with Bobby Holland, Director of Freight Business Analytics at U.S. Bank, and backed by popular demand, Dr. Jason Miller, the Eli Broad Endowed Professor of Supply Chain Management at Michigan State University. Hey, hey, Bobby, welcome back. How you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Wonderful. And Jason, how you been, my friend?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
You bet. This is going to be a terrific hour. So, Corinne, we were talking World Cup in the green room. It has been the undeniable, one of the biggest sporting events in at least my recent memory. We have fans across the spectrum. Some are deep passionistas. Others are more casual fans. But all that, I want to use that as a fun warm-up question. So as we keep digesting the 2026 World Cup experience, Bobby, what was one of your favorite aspects of what we saw play out across the World Cup?
For me, it was more socially from the standpoint. I've got family in Canada.
Okay.
And they are way more into soccer, at least in the region where I live, than in Canada, than here. They're diehard Bills fans here. But the part that I got a kick out of was just seeing all of the cars. It's like everybody's car is decorated with the flags driving all over. And it's like the whole area where my wife is from turns into a circus. National flags all over the place. And it's just crazy. People honking their horns in traffic with the, you know, it's like I said, it's like mayhem for that period of time. So it cracks me up because that doesn't happen down here.
That's right, Bobby. I love that. And all the imagery of the passion from the fans was certainly one of my favorite parts. Jason, a World Cup 2026, your thoughts?
It's over. We can focus on baseball again.
As we said, there's fans across the spectrum. And really quick, Jason, who's your baseball team?
I am a Yankees fan. So
okay. Oh, man, y'all got another great team. My Atlanta Braves had a had their hands full with the Yankees last weekend, I think. And Corinne, back to World Cup, though. What we both lived in Metro Atlanta, so yep. We saw maybe a different perspective for a lot of folks. What was your favorite experience?
Yeah, the fans were my favorite. So I did go down to the Fan Fest that was in downtown Atlanta near the stadium where a few of the games were hosted. And it was really, I mean, it rivals SEC football tailgating. It was a lot of fun and a lot of great people watching. So there were flags of every color and support for every team, not just the teams that were playing here in Atlanta.
I'm with you. I was downtown the morning after Argentina won the semifinal, and you could feel the energy, even over coffee and just that morning. So a lot of good stuff. All right, so we got to get into supply chain stuff. We got so much to get to here today, Corinne, Bobby, and Jason. And Bobby, we're going to start with, you know, if you had to put the Q2 2026 version of the U.S. Bank Freight Payment Index into a one-sentence theme, what would that be, Bobby?
Well, what I would say is that Q2 was a capacity story, not a demand story. We had soft freight volumes, but tighter capacity, higher fuel costs. And then there were also structural carrier constraints that drove transportation costs sharply higher across the country.
Okay. A preview of coming attractions, folks. Stick around as we cover 7 key takeaways, 2 at the national level, and 5. We go through each of the regions, so stay tuned. But first, we got to set the table a little bit more. And Jason, you know, we've enjoyed several conversations with you over the years. We always learn, always leave here with 17 pages of notes, Corinne, when Jason and Bobby joins us. But for our new audience members, Jason, that may not catch you on social or a lot of your appearances, share a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Yeah, so I'm primarily a research faculty member here at Michigan State. A lot of my work is either in the trucking space, a lot on safety, pricing dynamics, employment dynamics, and the like. And then a lot of my other work is more the intersection of different supply chain topics and economics. So a lot having to do with tariffs, regulatory changes, and things of that sort.
Okay. Outstanding. And folks, if you love supply chain data, folks, I'm telling you, do yourself a favor. Go follow Dr. Jason Miller on LinkedIn, and we're going to make that easy. We're going to share one of his recent posts right here, one of my favorite ones. Okay. Corinne. I want to level set, too, on your perspective in terms of how industry leaders like yourself and many supply chain leaders out there utilize resources like the U.S. Bank Freight Payment Index, and kind of a two-parter here. Now, you've been with us numerous times over the years as we dive into this. What's been some of your favorite feedback we get on the show?
Yeah, first of all, we get a lot of feedback on this particular show every quarter. And I think it's because it is so rich in insights and indications of what just happened. So it's still a lagging indicator, but it's a tightly correlated lagging indicator for us in that it's the end of Q2. And freight and freight movement is a great indicator. We get the regional breakdowns. When we look at things like raw materials moving into factories or finished goods moving into distribution centers and retail shelves, I'm telling you, when freight moves, that means the economy's in motion. So I look forward to this conversation, and I think many supply chain leaders look forward to it or download the report that U.S. Bank makes available to us as well. So really looking forward to the discussion today.
Well said, Corinne. Great to have you back with us as we dive in. And then Bobby, again, for our newer audience members, you know, a lot of folks may not know we've been covering this series quarterly for 6 or 7 years now, I think. So for our new audience members, tell us a little bit about what the U.S. Bank Freight Payment Index is, what it analyzes, and how it works.
Well, the Freight Payment Index, U.S. Bank Freight Payment Index, is our view of the marketplace. It comes from over $46 billion in payment processing data. It measures actual freight shipments and spending nationally and regionally. It's seasonally and calendar adjusted so that it gives shippers a clearer view. It's also same store sales type of comparison. So we're not measuring, you know, our business, but we're extrapolating the economy at large. So it's our view of the marketplace. It's information, it's other data points that our customers and subscribers can use to gauge themselves in the market.
Good stuff. And folks, you're seeing some of the images, especially the regional breakdown, which is my favorite part probably each quarter. And even better yet, we're going to drop the link so you can go check it out. You can view it digitally. You can print it out, spill coffee on it, you name it.
Hey, Scott, I neglected to mention one thing that we've done to enhance it. It also contains data, rates-related data from our partner DAT. We talk about rates and their impact on the economy, but now we actually have data from an arguably number one freight data provider. So again, that's just makes the information more valuable to our subscribers.
I'm with you. That's taking the value proposition a step further. So good, great call out there. And we just conducted the freight rates version as well. Okay. So we're going to dive into the seven key takeaways with quite a panel with Jason, Bobby, and Corinne. And where we want to start first with Bobby is really the national market outlook, right? At a very high level. I think you got two key takeaways that you're going to share with us there. Tell us more.
Well, nationally, freight demand remained subdued. We saw the shipments decline 1.1% from Q1 and 2.8% year over year. But shipper spending rose, 6.4% and quarter over quarter and 28% annually. And that divergence is what led to the theme of this particular issue of the freight payment index. We also want to mention that, higher fuel costs, while it played a role, it was not the strongest issue at the market. It's tightening truck capacity, we believe. So, and our data, we believe, shows that.
Okay, so getting out of the gate at a national level, Jason, when you hear that and when you combine what Bobby shared and what the Freight Payment Index shares with what you're seeing, and you measure that every single day, give us some thoughts, Jason.
Yeah, so I think that the key thing is we're seeing right now is on aggregate, freight demand is either, depending on index, is either shrunk a little bit from last year or gained a little bit from last year, but it's essentially a universal read. The demand on aggregate is not really that changed from where we were a year ago. What we are seeing, though, is a bifurcation in terms of certain shipper verticals are doing phenomenally well, other verticals are struggling. And the clear pattern is shippers whose products are needed for this stuff, building the physical ecosystem supporting AI computing. So wholesalers of electrical goods, so copper wire and things like that, phenomenally strong business. On the other hand, major appliance makers. You've seen Whirlpool publicly say that, 2026 is a worse year than 2025, and 2025 itself wasn't that good of a year. You can see furniture production as measured by the Federal Reserve continues to decline and is now, over 20% down from where it was in 2017 or from where it was in 2021. And so what we're seeing on the demand side is there's pockets of strength and pockets of weakness. It's sort of balances out on aggregate. And then on the supply side, you've had a major contraction, ongoing contraction of supply that continued all through last year, likely further facilitated by regulatory crackdowns, especially on spot market related capacity. That's, I think, the big story is some of that capacity that really lives on the spot market has been more affected. My read right now is I'm actually starting to see some signs that capacity has likely found a bottom based on new truck sales, based on where the employment data is at. And so what this has done is we've had a very sharp run up of spot prices for the first, this year, starting really in December last year. The data is indicating, though, that spot prices reached a peak in late June, early July, right before the 4th. We have seen them come down on both absolute basis, but also on a line haul basis, especially as diesel has went up, is substantially higher now than what it was in, let's say, early July. but rates are actually lower on absolute terms. But a lot of that is just regular seasonal cooling. And so now what we're waiting for as we move through the second half of this year, you know, we've got a break check week coming up here at the end of August, see how much tightening occurs with that, and then trying to see how things tighten up once we get into more into the holiday season to really get a sense of where the tea leaves will be for 2027.
Folks, you see why we love Bobby and Jason when they get together. Corinne, I was trying to take notes too,
and I was like, wait a minute.
Bifurcation.
We'll come back into that. Yeah.
Bifurcation, bottoms, and break checks. Yeah. Three things he mentioned. What your thoughts, Corinne?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the break checks are important because that can slow down capacity based off of what the checks are actually showing. What stood out to me, the number that jumped off the page was the 28%. So shipments are down or flat, while spending is up more than 28%. That's a big gap. So that gap tells us something fundamentally has changed in the supply and demand equation. And for supply chain leaders, I think it's really important that they look at this as an early indicator, and they should, don't wait for demand to rebound before you start thinking about capacity. Because as Jason said, spot rates have been much higher than what we've seen historically. So if demand starts to strengthen from here, we could see considerably more pressure on transportation costs and service availability.
Good stuff, Corinne. Don't wait, folks. All right. So I think from national level, we're going to go to the wild, wild west, and we're going to work our way across the country regionally. Again, this is my favorite part of all this data. And Bobby, let's start with you. What are you seeing? What was your key takeaway from the west?
Well, the west was the standout performer. We see that shipments increased like 0.5% quarter over quarter and 5.5% year over year, which was the strongest annual growth of any region. And we saw spending increased 12% quarter over quarter and almost 36% annually. And there are factors that supported this, including the fact that after the wildfire, housing starts way outperformed the national average. And there was a 17% May increase at the Port of Los Angeles.
All right. So Jason, when you think about the activity specifically, the nuances and the specific factors playing out west, what do you see?
Yeah, so I mean, when you can see it too, for intermodals doing very well right now. Now, a lot of that too, especially with Q2, was the West Coast in Q2 of 2025 was especially weak because you had the astronomically high tariffs that the U.S. put in place on China, which really caused a drop in Chinese import volumes. And so May and June of last year were very weak for imports from China. May and June this year are better for that. So it's going to, helps cancel out. New for July was phenomenally strong last year for containerized imports. This year, unlikely to be that strong. And so I think that to me, that's been the biggest dynamic I've been looking on the West Coast piece is just getting a sense for where import volumes are at. And I literally just finished making course content for my master's program just today. And so, right now containerized imports, US, they're down about 2% from where they were year to date last year through the middle part of the year, but up 6% for that month in June. So, I don't think anybody's expecting a major drop in imports through the rest of the year. And we're now going to be kind of in a, wait and see on the resilience of the consumer as we move into that holiday season.
Mm. All right, Corinne, a lot of good stuff there from Jason and Bobby. And by the way, I don't know what my grade would be if I was a master's student in Jason Miller's class. Corinne, I know you get an A+. I'm thinking C, C plus on my end. Corinne, what do you think?
You'd have fun though, Scott, I'm sure.
Okay. That gives you all the information you need. All right, so Corinne, out west.
I think the second half of the year is going to be interesting, and I would continue to watch the west carefully just because of import volumes and then intermodal and the activity that comes from that. I think that the west is going to give us an early indication of what's going to happen nationally, especially if demand for freight begins to strengthen. And if we see recovery, we're certainly seeing some industries that are in growth mode I'd like to see that more evenly across industries.
Yeah, I'm with you. Good stuff there, Corinne. I want to dive in one quick thing on the West. I'm a bit of a nerd, and the West is one of my favorite topics. And Jason stole most of my thunder, as expected. But check this out. June that was at the Port of Los Angeles, number one, which I think Jason and Bobby touched on, the third highest import month of all time at the Port of L.A. You know, so number one. Of course, May was a good month, too. But number two, all told, imports and exports, loaded and empty, they topped 1 million total container units for the third time in history. And I think they're the only port in the Western Hemisphere to ever do that just once. So that kind of gives you a little bit of a scope of how critical they are, that cog is, in our economy, really the global economy. All right, so we're going to go from the West to the Southwest. And Bobby, we'll start with you. Give us your key takeaway from the Southwest.
Well, the Southwest is like the most fascinating region in the index. There's a lot of things that we've already talked about, but it's very vividly represented in the Southwest region. For example, shipments declined 20.2% year over year, but spending increased almost 40%. And that's the largest volume versus spend disconnect in the country for the index. It no doubt illustrates the effect of capacity constraints, such as what we've talked about, ELP enforcement, B1 visa cancellations, increased cross-border scrutiny and cabotage concerns, basically nuking the capacity there.
All right. Jason, Southwest, what do you see?
Now, I think that highlights one of the aspects of this, which is when we look at tightening of capacity, there is a certain, I think, a regionalized aspect to it. And as I mentioned, English language proficiency and cabotage concerns are especially relevant in that Southwestern piece.
Yep. All right, Corinne, out West, what'd you see, my friend?
Yeah, I got to echo something that Bobby said. I mean, this might be the most striking number or disparity in the report for Q2, with shipments down 20% and spending up almost 40%. You know, you get back to that balance and expense and looking at, you know, cost per mile, it's a striking disconnect. And because the Southwest is such an important cross-border corridor for North America, this is bigger than just trucking. This is changes in capacity, compliance, as we mentioned, and some of the cross-border operations, and that could continue to ripple through from sourcing to inventory policies to manufacturing decisions.
Mm. Well, Corinne, thank you for that segue. I'm going to pick up on the manufacturing you mentioned there and share this data. So, folks, of course, Texas makes up a big sizable chunk, not only the states, but certainly the Southwest region. And the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas puts out a monthly report called the Texas Manufacturing Outlook Survey. It's a survey, right? So keep that in mind. And Texas, did you know, Texas is second only to California in terms of overall manufacturing gross GDP. So it's kind of an important player. If you look at the Dallas Fed data for 2Q, there was a slight increase in manufacturing production in the state in April, which is good news. But since then, at least in May and June, two consecutive months of declining production. And the report for June states, quote, other measures of manufacturing activity remained positive, but showed signs of slower growth in demand, end quote. Now, we're going to drop a link to that survey, and there's lots of good information. Check out the comments. The comments come from all the manufacturers. That tells a story in and of itself. Okay, so we're going to move to the Midwest region. And Bobby, key takeaway from the Midwest.
Well, the Midwest slowed a little bit. Shipments fell 3.7% from Q1, but they were still 2.8% above a year ago. Spending was still elevated at 22.9% above last year. And now the Midwest region, one thing to watch, one thing to keep track of is the role of data centers, a lot of data center products and related activity in the Midwest. So even in a soft freight economy, there's a lot of physical demand that's tied to AI and digital infrastructure in the Midwest.
Hmm. All right, Jason, this is kind of your neck of the woods, as I believe, I can't remember. Where in Michigan do you call home?
I'm in East Lansing, so kind of the middle part of the state.
Well, so what are you saying?
Yeah, so I'd say right now when you look at the Midwest, and Bobby brought it up, I mean, Ohio is especially on the data center piece, and that's providing strength. But again, I think, you know, we brought it up, you know, even at a national level, it's just this weak housing market is one of the big headwinds from a freight demand standpoint. Housing permits are at best flat from last year, if not down a little bit more. They're certainly down from 2024. The BEA's price-adjusted data on single-family housing construction, which is taken into consideration size of houses as well, that's down, you know, mid-single digits year over year. And so I think that's been one of the big sort of headwinds on the market. But then that also then has this insidious effect of feeding into the affordability concerns a lot of Americans have. Mm. Because without supply of those houses, housing prices stay up. A lot of homeowners don't want to necessarily see a flood of houses on the market that destroys the equity value of their homes. And so there's a lot of, I'd say, you know, ebb and flow, you know, give and take there. But certainly, I mean, I can say it doesn't feel the construction around, you know, where I live is the same degree it was even a couple years ago.
Quick check on the activity along Grand River Avenue. I think that, how's the activity there, Jason? Is it off the charts?
Well, students are gone right now, so it's pretty slow.
Okay. All right. We'll get a measure of that maybe in a couple months. All right. So, Corinne, the Midwest, what are your thoughts?
Well, I personally wouldn't read too much into the Midwest decline as a, you know, read it as a reversal yet at this point in time, because Q1 was strong in the Midwest and shipments are still positive year over year. So to me, this is a good reminder that one quarter doesn't necessarily make a trend, but let's look deeper, as Jason was telling us, you know, some specific industries that are driving growth and others that are still seeing contraction. So, you know, AI and data center related, we're seeing growth in those sectors, but then housing is still a huge variable really across all regions.
That's right. And in fact, we're going to touch on more data centers in a moment, especially as we get to the Southeast. That's a good call out, Corinne, Jason, and Bobby. I want to talk about housing. We all know how critical housing is, not just to the economy, but certainly, of course, manufacturing, the freight market, you name it. And I want to take a little closer look at some of the things that Jason in particular was touching on. This comes from the Federal Reserve Economic Data, a.k.a. FRED. I think the St. Louis Fed administers this, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, despite a bit of a rebound in overall housing starts in June, second quarter 2026 was down 5% from the previous quarter. Jason, as I was going through, folks, if you want supply chain data education, go through Jason's LinkedIn feed. I mean, almost every day he shares his perspective, but the data that bolsters it. And one of the things I landed on, Jason, was your comments about 2 weeks ago on whether we get optimism or maybe pessimism from the housing, you know, ecosystem. Give us some thoughts there, Jason.
Yeah, it's not very easy to be optimistic right now at the moment. I mean, when you look at pending home sales, they're running about 30% below where they were consistently running in 2017 through 2019. They've been gangbusters starting around July 2020 through about January or February of 22. And when the Fed raised rates and mortgage rates went up, with the 10-year yield going up, they just crashed. You're seeing mortgage rates are now kind of hovering at about the highest levels they've hovered in a year. So you've seen, you know, even softer on kind of that side of things. Wall Street Journal just had an article not that long ago. Lumber prices are up, so home building costs are higher. And obviously the energy price shock doesn't help housing, because shingles are primarily, you know, made from oil derivative, being asphalt. You're talking the surcharges for getting concrete mixers out to construction sites is now paying a lot more for diesel. And we're seeing diesel futures even today are back, you know, $4.30 a gallon. You add about a buck, at least a buck to a buck 25 that you're looking at. You know, we're stuck around 535 to 550 diesel right now, unless something changes. So it's just not there's not an encouraging environment there. But the bigger question that is just, where's the 10-year yield go? Yeah. We had the consumer price index data today came in as expected. We're going to get the producer price index data tomorrow. We'll see where that is. But I think we're going to be all watching closely whether the Fed decides to raise interest rates when they meet in September.
That's right. And then going back to that Texas Manufacturing Outlook Survey, a lot of comments from manufacturers. Please bring the interest rates down. I'm not sure if that's going to happen at all. We'll see. And we're going to give a snapshot of the freight market ahead, especially from Corinne and Jason in just a moment. All right. So let's hit the Northeast, region. And Bobby, we'll lead off with your key takeaway from this region. Tell us more.
Well, we see that the Northeast stabilized after some first quarter disruptions, but shipments were essentially flat quarter over quarter, but they were up 2% over last year. Spending increased 5% from Q1 and 26.5% from a year ago, marking the seventh consecutive quarterly spending increase. This also notes that the World Cup preparation likely added some modest freight to Boston, New York, and Philadelphia.
Well, I know one thing the World Cup added. I saw the story in Boston where the beer freight really picked up steam. They were consuming plenty of adult beverages in Boston. Jason, the Northeast, what are you seeing?
Yeah, not much there. I'll admit that's a region I don't tend to focus on quite as much just because it's not the freight-generating hub with the decline in manufacturing activity really over the last 50 years that it used to be. I mean, you obviously have some strength for building of semiconductor plants and things like that. But once those plants are done, they really don't generate that much freight at the end of the day, and especially not of the truckload variety.
Mm. All right. Corinne, Northeast, thoughts?
Yeah. Well, what Jason just said, freight volumes are basically flat, but the spending has increased over seven consecutive quarters now. So that definitely is a trend that is worth keeping an eye on. But it also tells us that the transportation costs aren't higher simply because of a one-quarter fuel story. There's something more structural happening around capacity and then continued fuel costs going up as well.
Yep. Good stuff there, Corinne. Hey, a second ago, before I hit the Southeast, we talked about Dr. Miller on the housing, the U.S. housing market. Yeah. Folks, go check that out. Give it a full read. And you can also share your own two cents on that. And of course, check out many of his other posts. And one more thing about the housing market I read. And folks, look, I'm not a real estate guru. So let me just put that disclaimer up there. But the existing house sales market, doesn't impact the freight market. But that hit a 30-year low, I think, in the last couple of years, and that hasn't rebounded for a lot of the same reasons that Jason put out there earlier. So we'll see where we go from there.
Yeah, but Scott, remember, when people buy new homes, then they refurbish and repair, and so that drives good freight volume as well. It may be through retail or through home improvement stores, but usually when somebody buys a new home, there may be new carpet involved and some new furnishings.
The magic is in the indirect spin. I like it. Great point, Corinne. All right. So maybe it's just we wouldn't want to buy a house. I'm like, no more budget. We've got into the house, no car, but no TVs.
No air conditioning. We've got a roof over our head. We're ready to go.
Gosh. All right. So from there, let's come home to where we're at least me and Corinne call home, the Southeast region. Bobby, what's your key takeaway from this part of the world?
Well, the Southeast posted its first shipment increase in three quarters. Shipments rose almost 1% quarter over quarter, but remained 6.5% below year-ago levels. Spending did climb, however, 10% sequentially and 23.7% year over year. Again, data center construction in Northern Virginia and Atlanta provided an important freight tailwind, helping to offset persistent housing-related softness.
Outstanding. We'll touch more on that, the data center factor, in a second. Jason, I hope you pay attention to the Southeast market. You're going to hurt my feelings. What are you seeing down here?
Yeah, no, I think, as Bobby described it, the story is, again, this one sector that is just a disproportionate amount of freight growth year over year, helping to offset the housing sector that has been weak and is absolutely, and that housing piece absolutely critical for the Southeast. And I think we're even starting to see signs of that in terms of how hot the flatbed market especially was the first half of this year, but also how it's now cooled down quite a bit. Again, normal seasonality, flatbed peaks really about March through June and then starts to calm down as construction starts to get sort of on the other side of things. And so again, that's going to be one of those things I'm going to be watching very closely over the coming months to see if we see cooling that is beyond sort of normal seasonality.
Good call outs there. Corinne, what are you seeing here?
Yeah, this it's a trend that I find fascinating. I mean, AI becoming a freight story. You know, we tend to talk about AI as software and computing power, you know, the digital elements, if you will. But building the infrastructure out is an enormous physical supply chain. And they are, you know, building these data centers just as quickly as possible. So that's construction materials, electrical equipment, cooling, to use Jason talking about the market cooling, but cooling systems, servers, water, power infrastructure, all of that is coming together around these data center initiatives. And that translates into real freight and to growth. And we are definitely seeing that in the Southeast and in the Midwest.
So the Atlanta Journal-Constitution had a fascinating article, I thought, that took a look at the growing relationship between the data center bonanza and the warehousing market, especially in these six cities or regions that I'm showing here right now. And for folks listening, I'll mention the cities or the regions, rather. Dallas, Atlanta, Phoenix, Chicago, Virginia, right? And Austin and San Antonio. So Dallas and Phoenix in particular saw massive increases in leased warehouse space associated with the data center boom in 2025. But look at this next chart. If you look at this one, in those six areas, the regions I mentioned a minute ago, the share of leased warehouse space associated with data centers has doubled from 7% to 14% from 2022 to last year, 2025. And my hunch, and probably the panel's hunch, I don't know, I'm not going to speak for anybody, is that trend will continue. And of course, it'll impact freight activity. Corinne mentioned some of those things, generators, cooling chillers, transformers, server racks, and more. And folks, we're going to drop a link to what I thought was a good read in the AJC. And all of that really gives us a nice segue, Jason, because I would love for you and maybe the rest of y'all to weigh in on what we'll call, some folks are calling, the physical ecosystem of AI and how all that's impacting supply chain, but especially the freight markets. Tell us more, Jason.
Yeah, so if you look right now, air freight imports, as an example, are up about 17% year over year on a weight basis, which is the easiest way to measure with Census Bureau data. That's all-time records, higher than where we were at in 2022 when the containerized import ports were all log-jammed and a lot of importers switched over to air freight. This is all because of large servers and GPUs and things of that sort that are driving this volume growth. You know, sales of electrical goods wholesalers are up 30% year over year, and that's even adjusting for price changes. Professional equipment wholesalers like computers, it's up 15% from last year. Electrical goods production in this country is up about 5% year over year. That's transformers, large batteries, and things of that sort. Construction steel production is around the same levels it was in 2021 and early 2022 in the midst of the warehouse building bonanza. And so you mentioned refrigeration and cooling. Price-adjusted new orders for refrigeration, cooling equipment suppliers, they're up 60% from where they were in 2022. And so there's just this incredible demand right now being created for all of these goods necessary to construct data centers. One of the challenges, though, with that is we're seeing very pronounced price increases. As an example, memory chips coming from South Korea, which is the high bandwidth memory, 849% year-over-year price increases based on the import data. So that's not 8.49, that's 849%. It's now eight times more expensive. And so you're seeing for many of these different types of products, you know, Eaton has said their statement has been the price to build a gigawatt of data center capacity has went from about $6 billion to $13 billion since 2022. And so that's their estimate. It's actually different from what the Census Bureau and the Bureau of Labor Statistics have in terms of price changes. But, you know, their boots on the ground perspective is things are more expensive. Steel's 40% more expensive now since the president took office. So because of the tariffs. And so the price of building all these things is going up. And so the challenge, I think, from my standpoint for the freight market is couple-fold. One is that really most freight growth where we're seeing shippers doing better than they were last year or 2 years ago is in this one sort of vertical. And it's in a vertical where when you read reporting by Bloomberg that 70% of Microsoft's AI-related revenue is OpenAI, you start to get worried that basically we're building this ecosystem out for two companies right now, and that's OpenAI, who makes ChatGPT, and then Anthropic, who makes Claude. And so the concern there is, if we are overbuilding, what then happens on the downside of that? Because we recently had an overbuilding boom in warehousing, because warehousing capacity was remarkably tight in 2021 and then the first half of 2022. We started all this warehousing in 21 and 22. But then as it started to come online, especially in 23, vacancy rates started rising, and construction now of warehouses is down almost 40% from the peak level we were at in late 22, early 23. And so the concern, of course, is that time period I described, you know, as things cooled in construction, especially in 23, we had a very deep, painful freight recession that occurred in terms of lost physical volume of freight that's moving. And so the concern that I have is when you have a weak housing market, when you have consumer spending that is challenged, I think is a safe way to frame it, is if anything happens that causes sentiment towards building this ecosystem to cool, then there would be a cascade over into the freight markets before we can get sort of the other sort of demand side cylinders firing.
Okay, we asked, he delivered. Corinne, react to that description and observations on the physical supply chain, physical economy associated with AI.
I'm very bullish on the economy driven by AI. So, but I believe that Dr. Miller is giving us some, you know, some good caution signs that we should pay attention. So maybe I'm cautiously optimistic, but I'm still very optimistic just because it's going to take us that time to build that additional capacity in the market and the power infrastructure and the water infrastructure to support that. I wish there were actually more jobs associated beyond the construction process for long-term job growth in an AI-driven economy. But I think we're still just scratching the surface of where AI can be applied, not just in supply chain, but in business. Optimistic to cautiously optimistic, I would say.
I like it. I like it. One more thing. Jason, you'd mentioned copper in one of your earlier responses, and I was just doing a write-up on copper the other day. Dr. Copper, as it's being referred to oftentimes because of its impact on economic thing, all things economics. Copper is up 50% year over year.
Yeah.
Despite challenges in the two largest copper producers in the world, the International Energy Agency, the IEA, sees a possibility of a 30% supply deficit by 2035. So we'll see.
You look at copper and you look at steel, which with Jason mentioned as well for construction, those both being up 40 and 50% is that's a tangible impact. And then you double that with transportation costs being up over 20% to 28% for the year. These are very real economic challenges that we've got to look at for the long-term return on investment of building out this new infrastructure.
That's right. Folks, lock down your pipes, lock down your AC units. We've seen the bad actors take advantage of the demand out there for sure. All right, really quick. We're going to come down the home stretch here in a second, and we're going to make sure Bobby tells us where everyone can find the Q2, really all of the U.S. Bank Freight Payment Indexes, and we're going to make sure we get Corinne's patented key takeaway, and we'll make sure folks know how to learn more about what all the cool things that Jason and the SC Supply Chain Management Program at Michigan State University are doing. But first, crystal ball time, folks. And Bobby, you know, everyone that's been on this show before knows you can't comment on any predictions, but Jason and Corinne can. And I'll take 2 out of 3. It's not bad. All right. So, Jason, when you think of the freight market in the months ahead, give us some bold prognostications.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm expecting capacity is certainly going to remain tighter than it was last year as we move through the rest of the year. I do think that, you know, barring something shocking happening to diesel prices that would cause a $6.50 or $7 a gallon figure, spot rates on an all-in basis hit their peak for now in late June, early July, right before the 4th. We're going to go through our sort of seasonal ebb and flow. We'll see where things are at by November or December to really get a sense of where market tightness is at. But I do think, especially for the brokers out there, the worst of the capacity tightness that we saw from mid-May through June, we are past that. And so as we move into the next couple months, it's really going to be a question of seeing if we've got more legs on the manufacturing side in terms of further demand growth and whatnot and or not. One of the challenges is, has been mentioned by our, by you know, some of the folks watching, there's so much uncertainty. You know, we've had a huge indirect stimulus that businesses have received by the over $100 billion the federal government has had to pay back in tariffs that the Supreme Court ruled illegal.
Right.
And so we're trying to even understand what has been the effect of that money coming back in these companies investing it and spending it in different ways. And so right now, I think that's going to be the key thing is uncertainty. We've got uncertainty about where the AI space is going, but we also have uncertainty about where energy prices are going. And so I think we're all going to be, you know, quit refreshing our browsers every few hours to see if something else has developed geopolitically, because that's the world we live in right now at the moment.
Mm. Very grounded and practical set of observations there, Jason. Thank you for that. All right, Corinne, as you mentioned, you're much more bullish on AI in the months to come, years to come maybe. But what do you think the freight market, any bold prediction you want to share, Corinne?
Yeah, so I am bullish on AI, but my thing that I think we have to watch is if demand comes back in these other sectors. If we start seeing rising demand in other sectors, especially as we head into the holiday period, we could really have a capacity issue that could further drive cost up. So I think if I'm a chief supply chain officer and I'm looking at these numbers right now, the risk reward is, should I be locking in capacity now or do I wait and look at things on the spot rate? So Jason mentioned that our spot rates peaked before July 4th. That's part of the, you know, the magic, if you will, that all shippers run is what do they want to lock in and what are they looking to pick up in the spot market? So we're back to uncertainty. Do I leverage that uncertainty to stay flexible over time, or do I go ahead and lock in now?
Mm. $1 billion question out there. And folks, I was just going to, you know, you heard Corinne and Jason both reference uncertainty in so many different ways. That probably has got to be the word of the year if it wasn't the word of the year last year. But I would argue in this era of high uncertainty, we've got to put our hands and our eyeballs and our ears on data-driven, proven insights from trusted deliverers of that. And I would argue Jason, Bobby, Corinne are all trusted sources of information that will help guide your way in this era of uncertainty. So let's do this. We've gotten a snapshot of the path ahead, and now I want to make sure folks know how to find at least one trusted source of information. Bobby, what's the easiest way for folks to find the Freight Payment Index put out by our friends at US Bank?
As you see on the picture, freight.usbank.com. And as you mentioned earlier, there's a rates edition available at the same link. So,
outstanding. Folks, go check that out. Jason, you and I, one of the past conversations we had is I think you and I sat down with some of the incredibly bright students that were supply chain management majors at Michigan State University. You are doing incredible things. I really enjoyed that conversation. We got to do that again, by the way. But Jason, how can folks learn more about the cool things you are doing at Michigan State?
Yeah, so certainly best way to connect with me is just through LinkedIn. In terms of what's going on at Michigan State, I'd say visit our department webpage. I am no longer the department head anymore, so I am back to being, as we call, regular faculty and just doing my research and my teaching. So I teach undergrad now for the first time in about 4 years this spring. So that'll be a nice welcome change.
That is outstanding, Jason. And folks, we're going to make it really easy. Drop link right there. You can learn more about the SCM program at Michigan State University. And we've dropped Jason's LinkedIn profile, and I would highly encourage y'all to go follow Jason Miller on LinkedIn. All right, Corinne Burson, we gave Bobby and Jason some tough questions here today, but you've got perhaps arguably the toughest one because you've got to figure out your favorite takeaway from all the goodness that the conversation has delivered here. So what say you?
Yeah, I guess my biggest takeaway is don't confuse soft freight demand with abundant capacity. You know, in the past, we could look at it that way. But Q2 tells us that's no longer the same thing. So as costs are continuing to rise, capacity is tightening, and the demand in all sectors really hasn't recovered yet. We're certainly seeing the pickup in demand in a couple of sectors that we mentioned, but we're not seeing it evenly across sectors. So for supply chain leaders, that's a signal to stay close to the data. So be sure you're checking with the U.S. Bank Freight Index every quarter. You're looking at the rates that they are also publishing now, and rely on those facts, not just feelings, right? And as always, it is a great time to be in supply chain. So I'm encouraged to know that Jason's helping to shape our future leaders, because I think it's a, you know, it's a great time to be in supply chain now, but even well into the future.
I'm with you. I am with you. And I appreciate the work all three of you are doing to shape industry, shape those that are making it happen in global supply chain each and every day. And as Corinne said, one of the things she mentioned, folks, be real close to the data or not do so at your own peril. And that's one of my favorite things about this very practical report that's dropped each quarter by Bobby and friends, U.S. Bank Freight Payment Index. Go check it out. And there's many others. And hey, we welcome yours. Tell us your go-to resources for similar perspectives. Let us hear from you. Okay, Bobby Holland with U.S. Bank. I tell you what, this was a terrific, well-rounded conversation. You always, I think you're like an executive producer here, Bobby, by now. Is that, can you add that to your title?
No.
Oh, that breaks my
heart. Too much pressure.
Well, regardless, well done again today. Appreciate the great actionable insights you and the team crank out each and every quarter. And, of course, the DAT edition, which only adds more value. So thanks for being here, Bobby.
Yep. You're all as well.
Jason, Dr. Jason Miller, great to have you back. Again, really appreciate all that you do in industry for informing all of us, your students, and those that follow you across social and, of course, through programs like this. Thanks so much for being here. And you are the Eli Broad Endowed Professor of Supply Chain Management at Michigan State University. Thanks, Jason.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Corinne Bursa, that's two for two this week, I think. Yesterday was a great show. This was always one of my favorite shows. And I really enjoyed your perspective as well, my friend.
Yeah, great to be here with you and Jason, and as always, Bobby Holland.
Facts, not feelings, folks. Facts, not feelings. Got to lean into that. Folks, hope you enjoyed the conversation as much as I have. But you know your homework. You got to take one thing. Jason and Bobby and Corinne delivered a cornucopia. Don't ask me to spell that. Of insights here today. Take one thing. Share it with your team. Do something with it. Deeds, not words. That's how we're going to navigate through these ever-challenging times. And with all that said, Scott Luton, on behalf of the Supply Chain Now team, challenging you, do good, give forward, be the change that's needed. And we'll see you next time right back here on Supply Chain Now. Thanks, everybody.
Join the Supply Chain Now community for more supply chain perspectives, news, and innovation. Check out supplychainnow.com, subscribe to Supply Chain Now on YouTube, and follow and listen to Supply Chain Now wherever you get your podcasts.